Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Thursday, May 28th, 2015. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. A charitable endowment fund here in Petersburg has awarded grants totaling $11,000 to six different local nonprofit organizations. That money will fund teaching supplies for young children, food for kids on the weekend, library programs for youth, and a shelter building for the Humane Association, among other items. Here's more in this report. The Petersburg Community Foundation is a permanent charitable endowment. It was established in 2008 with local contributions and organized under the Alaska Community Foundation. The organization has been giving out annual grants from earnings of that donated money. The foundation's vice chair, Glorianne Wallen, says the group was excited this year to award $11,000 in grant money.
Really trying to help a lot of, as many groups as we can with a substantial amount that makes a difference for their projects. And some reasons we were able to grant them a higher percentage. Some grants were able to fund the entire project. So we were real thrilled about that.
The fund earned around $20,000 in the past year, and some of that has been set aside for a potential future larger local project. The foundation announced this year's grant winners at an event during the Little Norway Festival weekend. Of the $11,000, $3,000 goes to the Salvation Army for an effort that is new to Petersburg called the Backpack Program.
We've heard that there's been some identification from the school district that there are some children who do go hungry over the weekends.
That's the Salvation Army's Misty Burks. She says starting up next school year, the Salvation Army will be filling 15 backpacks with food and giving them out to the school district. The district then will distribute them to kids who need the food over the weekend.
Yeah, this project has been really big on my heart. I just have a strong feeling, belief that no child should go hungry. And even if it's only over the weekend, then what we can do to help them, we need to do to help them.
Another $1,500 will be going to the Petersburg Children's Center. Preschool teacher Shauna Pitarase wrote the grant application for materials that will help teach reading, writing, music, and movement.
Music and movement tie closely into literacy because it helps children really get things like consonants and vowels and, you know, the syllables of things. And it makes it more fun because you can get up and dance and sing to books. And there's things like stuffed animals and flannel board pieces so they can act out the stories. Hopefully even some dress-up clothes. Kids would love that. Like the pout pout fish, actually, that I was just getting out goes with the book, and they love to take the pout pout fish and make it tell the story.
Peter Rosse says it's the second time the Children's Center has landed a grant through the Community Foundation.
And they're awesome to write to because they're funding all sorts of things in our community that make an impact here, not, you know, kind of maybe on a larger scale, but directly to children, families, everyone in our community. So I love everything about them.
In other grants, $1,000 will go to new display cases at the Claussen Museum, and $1,000 will go to fund new equipment at the Petersburg Medical Center's physical therapy department. The foundation also awarded $2,000 to the Humane Association to outfit a new cat shelter. The Petersburg Humane Association purchased a portable container that has been placed at the dog park near Sandy Beach Park. Association Vice President Jane Smith says they applied for this grant to make that container livable for stray and unwanted cats.
In particular, we're going to purchase materials to make caging. So when you go into the facility, you know, you can have cats separate and in nice big cages that will be comfortable for people to come in and pet them. And we're also going to have shelving in there for storage. We're going to have a washer and dryer in there to keep the facility clean and, you know, the blankets and towels and all that kind of stuff that we use to keep the animals, you know, in good shape.
Association board members have been housing the cats at their homes for more than a decade. Smith says the facility should be fixed up within the next year because of the grant money. And one more grant of $2,500 will fund programs for youth at the public library. Librarian Tara Alcock says that money will be used to develop programs for science, technology, engineering, arts, and math.
The whole goal of programs like this is to turn students from learners into makers. And so it's part of that makers movement, and so you'll see some, you know, like potentially classes with Lego or circuitry, and also some classes that combine arts and sciences. We're really excited about that.
The money will cover supplies and instructor stipends. Alcock says the library also was able to pair this grant money with another $8,800 grant from the state library.
And so we're really lucky. We've got these two grants. We compare them and purchase laptops and really, you know, expand that programming into, it's going to be really exciting to see sort of into fields we've not been able to go before.
That money could help start up a local Minecraft program. That's a computer game involving building in a virtual world. And the Community Foundation plans to keep awarding grants once a year and wants to keep its pool of money growing. Foundation Vice Chair Wallen says the Rasmussen Foundation offered a challenge grant of up to $10,000.
Linda Leary and Chris Norris, who are both on the Rasmussen board, have some discretionary funding, and they announced at our donor event that they would like to challenge Petersburg in finding new members, new people, new donors. It's not really a membership thing, it's a donor thing. So we are actively seeking new people that are interested in supporting the future of Petersburg and are excited that we're creeping up on about $500,000 in this account that will be managed into perpetuity on behalf of the future of Petersburg.
That new challenge runs into the fall. And there's a link to the Petersburg Community Foundation on our website along with this story. We're at kfsk.org. Wrangell officials are asking residents in that community to reduce their water consumption because of a shortage at that community's reservoirs. Water levels at both of Wrangell's reservoirs are low for this time of year due to a lack of spring rainfall and snowpack runoff. Borough Manager Jeff J. Bush says reservoir levels dropped quickly but are now falling a little more slowly.
It's not at a panic stage yet, but it wouldn't take too much longer. Our reservoirs don't hold a lot of supply, long-term supply, and so we rely on rain to pretty much keep them filled.
Wrangell's reservoirs are earthen dams that sit uphill from the Alaska Island Community Services Clinic, and a significant amount of rain is needed to return levels to normal, but there's more dry weather in the forecast. Jay Bush says the community's water supply is fine for now, especially because the cannery season is not in full swing.
If you had the canneries cranked up now and this was going on, they use a lot of water. They use, during the period of time they're running, they probably use, I don't know, 70% of the water or more that is used in the community.
Public Works Director Amber Al-Haddad says the low water levels means there's more sediment in the water, which makes it harder to treat. The water shortage gets worse. Wrangell may be taking additional steps to manage water use and encourage conservation. Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium is trying to meet the high demand for behavioral health services in Juneau by expanding services to non-natives. Juneau Empire reports the department has expanded into its former administrative offices and will offer behavioral health services to anyone seeking treatment starting up June 1st. Expanding services to non-native beneficiaries will reduce the number of people waiting in line for treatment, and the expansion will allow that department to bring in extra clinicians and support staff. Behavioral Health Program Supervisor and clinician Piper Powell says people will come forward to get services when they see that opportunity is there. The new space will include rooms for group sessions working with children and distance sessions with clients in rural Southeast Alaska. A small Juneau business launched up a Kickstarter campaign this weekend to crowdsource funds for a unique line of products. That company is hoping it's onto the next big thing in fashion, clothing and accessories sewn from the discarded salmon skin and crab shells. Elizabeth Jenkins has more on how commercial fishing byproducts are getting another upgrade.
Greg Kasberg, the founder of Tidal Vision, pulls out a wallet from his back pocket. It's a muted jade color, shiny, with a slightly bumpy texture.
It's much different than what you see when you throw a skin away in the garbage when you're cooking up your dinner or something.
The wallet is sewn entirely from salmon skin, sourced from a processor in Kodiak. But right about now, you're probably wondering...
Smells like heaven. I would say it smells quite similar to any vegetable tanned leather.
So no fishy smell.
No fishy smell at all.
Nope, no fishy smell. I confirm.
The skin has gone through a 24-step process that dries it out until it turns into leather. The material doesn't stink because the fish oils have all been removed.
And then we replace them with all-natural, vegetable-based tanning oils.
Casberg owns a gill netter and has been commercial fishing in Southeast Alaska for almost a decade. He recently sold his commercial fishing license to help fund Tidal Vision. The wallets are being sewn at a tannery in Washington State. His partner, Zach Wilkinson, has a background in economic development and agriculture. He says the ag industry already uses animal byproducts to make high-end items, like shoes and handbags. Why not Alaska fisheries?
Clearly this stuff is valuable and useful, and we can be doing something with it.
Some seafood processors sell for pet food, vitamin supplements, and fish meal.
What I'm particularly excited about is kind of moving those things up the value chain and producing higher value products.
Another item that Tidal Vision plans to roll out is clothing made from chitosan. It's extracted from crab shells. The fabric is antimicrobial, so perfect for socks, underwear, or sweaty gym shirts.
We're still going to recommend you wash your clothes, but as far as odor goes, you won't have to.
Stripping away chitosan from crab shells isn't new. It's usually done with formaldehyde, but the company has a patent-pending method to do it in a greener, more environmentally friendly way. They're hoping to eventually expand the product into bandages and medical supplies.
The sutures that dissolve into your bloodstream are commonly made out of chitosan.
If the product takes off, Casberg says the business could add an overall boost to revenue for fish processors in Alaska. He would be giving them $1 per pound for the skins, which he says is 90% more than fish meal manufacturers pay. And that money could trickle down to commercial fishermen who supply the processors.
That would increase our price. That would increase the money that we would be getting on our end.
Juneau fisherman Anthony Sine owns a boat called the Fortune and is preparing for the upcoming gillnet season. He says the price of seafood can fluctuate. Other revenue streams could provide more stability.
It greases the wheels, you know. Our seasons are short, especially the salmon season. Being able to get a little bit more money for my products strengthens my business, for sure.
Alaska has a long history with fish leather. Native people used it for its durability. It was marketed to tourists and fashion houses in the 1990s, until those ventures fizzled. Casberg says the biggest hurdle is convincing consumers byproducts are cool.
Yeah, rebranding, you know, fish waste. When people think of fish waste, you know, I think they almost plug their nose in the reaction. And so when people haven't seen it, felt it, smelt it, I think there is a challenge there.
Casberg believes the proof will be in Tidal Vision's quality goods. They're starting with wallets and plan to roll out one item at a time. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
This year's winner of the Petersburg Salmon Derby says he had a long and nerve-wracking fight with the prize-winning 50.9-pound fish. Scott Stafford went to high school in Petersburg but lives in Rochester, Minnesota, and is a doctor at the Mayo Clinic. He says he started fishing in Petersburg's Derby in 2006 on board the fishing vessel Odin. That boat was nearby when he landed the winner Saturday morning, and I spoke with him by phone about the winning fish.
It was incredible. It was incredibly stressful, actually, since anybody who's ever caught one by themselves knows there's a million ways to lose them. I knew it was a good fish when I got it on. I didn't know it was that big until the first time I got it to the boat. He came up to the boat, I'm guessing, six or seven times, and every time I got him to the boat, he was sideways. And when you're by yourself, you have to lift up with the rod and get the net under him, and the only way to do that is when their head is facing you. So he just kind of ambled off, and he would take out 40 feet, and then he would come back, and then he would turn his head away and leave again. And then he went under the boat twice, had to, you know, push the rod down in the water and walk him around the motors twice. I think I drove around him three or four times trying to keep him on the side of the boat. The peanut gallery had a good time. The Odin was there. They were all laughing and encouraging me, and Stevie Burrell and a bunch of other people were there too. Of course, I wasn't paying them too much attention at the time, but But I finally got it in the net, and it was, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes. But I think I lost 6 pounds just a nervous sweat.
Can you give a general area? Were you out in Frederick Sound? Or?
Oh, everybody knows where I was. We were on the north wall of Farragut Bay, outside the bar, about a third of the way out to Bay Point.
Okay, and can you reveal any other secrets, whole herring or plug cut or anything like that? Or?
Well, let me think. Mark Severson taught me how to bait, so I bait the same way Mark does, whole herring, toothpick, and a number two fastener, nose clip, green herring,
okay.
60 feet on the line counter. I was fishing same place everybody else here was fishing pretty much. I just happened to luck into him.
You knew it was big when you saw it, and when you got into the boat, did you know it was a contender?
You know, I knew it was over 40 pounds, but it didn't bleed. You know, I bonked it, and I had to cut his fin off, and he didn't start bleeding from the gills, so I just lifted him up with both arms and put him in my stern locker, and of course, I had beat him with a hammer about 20 times to make sure he was good and stunned so he wouldn't start thrashing and start bleeding. Took me about 30 minutes to calm down, even to figure out whether I could bait up again or not. And then after doing that, I just decided, why are you trolling again when you got to go enter the fish anyway? So I guess I got to town around 10:30 in the morning. I actually, Mark Severson asked me if I even finished my coffee, and the truth was I hadn't. I caught him on the first drag out. I was probably 20 minutes into my first drag. So.
Oh, early that morning?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I came over from town, so I got there, I don't know, 7 o'clock or so, and got him about 8 o'clock or 8:30.
But then I heard you even went fishing out after the Derby, after you'd landed that again, so you weren't done.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, I fished the next day. I was looking for second place, and all the days kind of run together because I've been fishing every day since. So, Phil and Sandy Meeks went with me, and we went back to Farragut, and Phil got a nice one. He came in ninth place, I think, overall. And again, it was one of those first drag in the morning, kind of on the north side of Farragut there. And that was all we got that day. We fished the rest of the day, and then the last day of the Derby, I didn't fish Derby. I just went south sport fishing and had some fun. Picked up one small one, lost another one, knocked a 26-pounder off of the boat with the net.
That one you can laugh about.
Yeah, well, you know, that happened first thing in the morning, too, so I was pretty mad at myself. I'm glad I bumped that one off and not the other one.
Yeah, okay. Anything else people should know about this win? Are you going to be back for more next year?
Oh, yeah, I'll be here next year as long as my wife keeps letting me come up here. Yeah, I'd really like to thank Mark Severson for teaching me Farragut and teaching me how to bait. And a friend of mine, John Walker, she couldn't make it up this year. I trolled a lot with him, and he's, you know, anybody who trolls King Salmon has to learn from somebody, and those two guys pretty much taught me everything I know about King Salmon fishing.
That's this year's winner of the Salmon Derby, Scott Stafford, and there's a full list of the 364 fish weighed in on this year's event on our website. And also remember, the prize ceremony is tonight at 7 o'clock at the AMB Hall. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.